Okay, so that's it for the fun and games. So let's get started. So we're moving on this week, right? We've spent a lot of time on David and Bathsheba, and now we begin with probably the most disgusting, maybe the most disgusting personality in all of Tanakh, which is Amnon, the son of David. But on the one hand, it's a really very difficult parak to do. Just it's such a horrible story. We're going to cover the first half of it this week, the Amnon's rape of Tamar. And then next week we'll discuss Avshalom's revenge, but we're gonna see there are some really 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 important points which are gonna come out of the story, even though our first reaction is just total horror, which is exactly the way the Navi presents it. So the Navi tells us, right, we have the whole unit of David and Bathsheba. I think we mentioned last week, right? It's like it's so interesting the way the Navi presents the story, where you have its own isolated unit with like a "and they lived happily ever after" ending piece, right, with Shlomo, and his name is Yedidya, and Hashem loves him, and everything's been restored. But at the same time, we pointed out the very end last week, like, now it's time for all of the bill is going to come due, right? The all of the punishments which had been promised to David, which really surpass anything which is told to anybody else in Tanakh. So the Navi tips its hat to that right at the very beginning of Perek Gimel, because the Navi says, "Vahi acharei chayin." It was after all of this just elaborated, just happened. Ulav Shalom ben David achos yafau shma Tamar vayavet Amnon ben David. So before we talk about these three people over here, just on the fact that it begins "Vahi acharei chayin," so the Abarbanel and the Malbim, they both write that it's not a coincidence that that's how the story begins. It's because the Navi is linking everything that is about to happen to everything which just happened. And Abarbanel kind of cribs from the Radak a little bit, actually, who later on in the Parak says, if we look at what's going to happen, right, and spoiler alert, so Tamar is going to be raped, and then Amnon is going to be murdered, and then Avshalom is going to assault David's Pilag Shim, and then Avshalom is going to be murdered. So the whole cycle here is one of Arayos and Cherev, which is Mida Keneged Mida, because those are the two things which David had fallen into back in Perek Yud Aleph, right? Forbidden sexual activity and then murder. Except with David, everything was very complicated, and here everything is going to be pretty straightforward. There's going to be absolutely no limud zuchus here whatsoever, at least for the first of the averus we're going to see. So we have these three people, and two of them we've met already. It seems like it's been a long time since we've met them, but way back in Perek Gimel in Shmuel Beis, or was it Perek Beis in Shmuel Beis? I don't remember. I think it was Perek Gimel. The Navi told us about the first children that that David had. They were born already, even while he was either on the run or while he was in Chevron, but they were born before he was before he moved to Yerushalayim. And we met Avshalom back then, and we met Amnon, who's the son of Ahinoam, a Yisraelis, who was one of the two wives, right, that David married together with Abigail. And Avshalom is the daughter of Maacha, who was the son of Maacha, who David married, who was the daughter of the king of Geshur, which is a small Canaanite nation like near the Kinneret. So we now have these three people, and we have a woman, Tamar. Now, what jumps out is that the Navi calls Avshalom the son of David, and the Navi calls Amnon the son of David, but it does not refer to Tamar, as the daughter of David, right? She's introduced as the sister of Avshalom. We're told she's Avshalom's sister. We're told she's beautiful, but we are not told what her relation is to David. Almost all of the Mefarshim are going to say that Tamar was, let's put it this way, at least not fully David's, or at least not fully Amnon's, was not Amnon's halachic brother, right? And they sense that over here, that Tamar is not referred to the same way. The big problem, if anybody, and really only the Abarbanel is going to say this, But anyone who suggests that Tamar is a full-fledged daughter of David and a sister of both Avshalom and Amnon is going to be, later on, Tamar is going to beg Amnon to marry. So that obviously can't happen if they're half-sisters. But we'll get to that, right? But the first indication here is that there's something kind of funny in the relationship over here. Tamar is only the sister of David, of Avshalom. It does not sound like she is the sister of Amnon. Okay, and then we're told by Yahweh, Amnon ben David. So this is not going to go well. Amnon has an unbelievable lust for Tamar to the point when he gets sick. Navi has a bit of a strange pasuk, a pasuk base. The Navi says, right, Vayitzer la Amnon his chalos, right? So he began getting sick. Bavur Tamar achoso for Tamar his sister. Now in the second pasuk, he does call the Navi does call Tamar Amnon's sister. So Abarbanel will tell us that it means that she's literally his sister. But everyone else is going to say the Navi is trying to emphasize how sick and perverse this desire is that Amnon is bringing here. Now the question is, Vayitzel Amnon ki besula hi. So he lusted after Tamar because she was a virgin, is what the pasuk sounds like it's saying, which is a little bit strange. We'll talk about it in a second. They pale bene Amnon la sosla meuma, but it seemed impossible for Amnon to do anything to Tamar. Already this pasuk here, lasos lo meuma, he wants to do something to her. It sounds like he's already dreaming of sexual violence in pasuk base. I mean, right, this is as horrifying as it gets. We have a sister, we have a plan he wants to assault. Like, what is going on? So just one point, there are two basic ways to read this in the Mefarshim. One is that indeed part of what fueled Amnon's lust was you really want what you can't have, right? So not only was Tamar his sister, but Tamar was one of the bisulot, right? So she's, you know, a virgin princess of the king's palace, and therefore she's like completely inaccessible, and that's driving him even more crazy. The way Rashi reads the pasuk over here is that Amnon, he badly wants her, and he's not able to get, and he can't imagine how he could get anywhere near her because she is a basula, and the basulas are very protected in the king's palace. And Rashi has a line that she was exceptionally modest, and she's not ever going out and cavorting and keep, or going outside of the palace, and keep that in mind. Rashi here is emphasizing that Tamar always stayed inside. Kol kvod bas melchanima, she's not going out. I think there's a reason why Rashi wants to say that, which we'll get to in a little bit. Then Pasuk Gimel, we're told one other thing. So, you know, very confusing pasuk. Well, Amnon Rea Ushmo Yonadav Ben Shim'a Achi David. So there's this buddy that Amnon has, and his name is Yonadav. He's the nephew of David. Right. So we have, you know, Yoav and Avishai. They were David's nephews, but they were in the army. And then Yonadav, he's the nephew, but he's the chacham. Torah, the Rabbi says he's an ish chacham ma'od. He's exceptionally smart, right? I think there is nowhere else in Tanakh, they say, where someone is defined as ish chacham ma'od. And that's, we got to figure out, like, what exactly does that mean? So Rashi quotes in the Gemara, ish chacham l'risha. And so Rashi says he was exceptionally smart, but it was an evil genius, which is difficult, a little surprising, because usually Chachma is inherently viewed as positive. Especially, Chachma is often contrasted with Nivala, right, which means disgustingness and vileness, and that's actually the title of the shir, but also foolishness. And we're going to see that Amnon is actually the ultimate Naval. So for Yonadav to be a Chacham, but to be bad, it's a little surprising. We'll see why Rashi says that, but the Malbim is going to have another take on Yonadav, that Yonadav actually might be exceptionally smart, exceptionally subtle, but we have to figure out what exactly is happening. Now, Yonadav is able to read Avshalom like an open book, right? He sees that something's wrong with Amnon. Why are you getting worse and worse day to day? So then he responds, he says, as Tamar achos Avshalom achi ani yohev. So I love Tamar, the sister of my brother Avshalom. Right. Once again, that's the second major hint over here that Amnon and Tamar are not actually brother and sister, because he doesn't refer to Tamar as his sister. He refers to Tamar as the sister of his brother Avshalom. And then Yonadav tells him the advice. And the question to figure out is, what is this exceptionally smart person Yonadav's advice? Yonadav says, lie on your bed, pretend to be sick. It's not hard to do because Amnon already is sick because he's so consumed with desire. David's going to show up and you'll say, please bring over my sister Tamar to give me some food. Tavreni lechem v'astali nayas habriya. She'll make some food for me. Now, you know, Amnon is the firstborn son of David, right? So he's not guaranteed the Malchus. Adoniyahu is older than Shlomo, but David's going to give it to Shlomo. You're not guaranteed the Malchus because you're the firstborn son. But he definitely has the inside track. So if Yonadav is good friends with Amnon, and he's exceptionally smart, so you got to wonder, what is it exactly that Yonadav thought was going to happen over here, right? He's not setting himself up well if he's trying to help Amnon come up with a plan to actually rape Tamar. So the Malbim is sensitive to this. And the Malbim argues that Yonadav, whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, is open to debate. And we could say that he's, you know, not going to be on, you know, the Mount Rushmore of Tzadikim. But the Malbim says that there was, actually sound advice that Yonadav was giving, right? He wasn't giving an idea that was totally perverse. He had a suggestion, a clever suggestion, which Amnon is then going to run with in a totally different direction. And when we see more of Yonadav next week, we'll see that there's a lot of reason to think that the Malbim is correct over here. Malbim suggests, Yonadav's plan is what, right? Yonadav said, he looks at Amnon, and in 2 seconds, Yonadav at least is able to realize that there's something fundamentally wrong with this, with his friend, right? / his cousin. So Malbim says, lo aladas Yonadav shiasa navala zos. It never occurred to Yonadav that Amnon would do this. Rakshsam befev dvarav shemitocham yakir hamalach shucho sheik betamar chuso v'chola avura admaves. This way, let's see. Right, David's going to get the message. His son Amnon, who's probably a very dramatic guy. I mean, you know, who gets sick to the point of being in bed because they're consumed with lust for somebody. So good, you know, dramatic Amnon is sick, and he, of all the people in the world, he needs Tamar to come and bring him some food. So, you know, Yonadav is smart enough to figure it out. Maybe the problem is not everyone is as smart as Yonadav, but Yonadav thinks that David should be able to pick up the hint as well and realize that what's happening under the surface is that Amnon has a lust for Tamar, has a desire for Tamar, let's just say, and therefore David will be willing to arrange for them to get married, right? He says that was Yonadav's plan. But what happens? So Amnon gets sick. Amnon's in bed. And then David comes to visit him. And Amnon already, the Malbim points out, Amnon changes the suggestion that Yonadav had. Right? So Amnon is going to take Yonadav's suggestion and then run with it in his own direction. Yonadav had just said, go send, tell your father, you know, you want Tamar to bring you some food. Right? So, you know, they didn't have Uber Eats or DoorDash. We're just going to have Tamar come along. Fine. So, but what happens over here? All of a sudden, Amnon gives this like intimate detail. Tamona Tamar Achosi Vatla Bev Leinai Shete Levivos. Right, she will make for me right in front of me two dumplings. Right, not just some bread and some food, but like a really specific detail of these Levivos Ve'evra Miada, and I'll eat it straight out of her hand, like she'll feed it to me. This is kind of creepy. In fact, Chazal say that as the part of the aftermath of this whole episode is the Sanhedrin is going to get together and on the spot make a gzeira against Yichud with a single woman, because this is not a good idea. But David does it. David sends Tamar. Okay, fine. Please go to Amnon. What happens? She makes the dumplings or the pancakes for him. Okay, and then we're told. So she brings him the food. Vayimain lachol. Amnon will not eat it. Vayomer Amnon hotziu kol Ishmael alive. Vayetziu kol Ishmael alive. Right. So he says, get every person out of the room. Now, this line hotziu kol Ishmael alive immediately rings a bell, because we've seen the exact same phrase very, very, very famously in the Chumash, right? This is exactly the line that Yosef uses before he reveals himself to his brothers. Get everybody out of here, and no one was there. The exact same line with Amnon before Tamar. This is the first obvious. There are a couple of other ones before, but it's the first obvious instance of a running theme we're going to have in this parak, which is, for whatever reason, I'll talk about it, the Navi is consistently going to bring the legacy of Yosef. There are going to be many Yosef references in this parak. We're also going to see many references to the story of Shechem and Dina. Now, at one level, it's obvious why the Navi wants us to remember both of those, because Shechem and Dina is one story of rape, and Yosef and Eshes Potiphar is another story of attempted rape. We're going to see there's a lot more to it than that as well. But that's already happening, right? Just we should know. So we then have the turning point. I mean, it's really hard to even read these psukim. So she brings the food into the inner chamber, and then Amnon says, right, he grabs her, Vayomala, Boi Shechvi Imi Achosi. Come and sleep with me, my sister. If anyone can find a more disgusting three words anywhere in Tanakh, or four words in Tanakh, than Boi Shechvi Imi Achosi, right, I'd be all ears. Right, he doesn't even just say Boi Shechvi Imi. Right? He says Boi Shechvi Imi Achosi. Like he has to mention it. He has to say, my sister. I think this is like over the top. What's Tamar's reaction? Of course, we're told Malo, and she says three different times, Al achi, al ta'aneni, don't do it, ki lo yasachin b'Yisrael, al ta'asas v'la zos. This is not done in Israel. Do not do this vile thing. Now that line of, right, this is not done in Israel, al ta'aseas v'la zos, that is straight out of Shechem and Dina. When Yaakov bam and Asadach Keshanah Yitzu and Hashem VaYichal Lahem Ha'od, they were furious. Ki Nivala Asab Yisrael Neshkav Espas Yaakov V'Chein Lo Ye'Asad. This is not done. At least it's not done in Israel. That was true at the time of the Shvatim, and that is true at the time of Amnon and Tamar. Right, saying this is, we don't do this. What is happening? Don't do it. Right. Then Tamar continues. I mean, you know, you could sense like the Navi's, the tone the Navi is trying to give us the sense of Amnon and Tamar here. Amnon is just, you know, four words, very, very short and brusque. Boi shechvi imi achosi. And then Tamar is desperate, and she's, you know, more and more and more protesting. Alachi, al ta'ananini, al ta'aseh simalazos, ani ana oleich escher pasi. Where am I going to take my shame after this? Right? So first she tells him, don't do it, it's disgusting. Second of all, don't do it because of what it is going to do to me, right? The cherpa, which I'll never be able to live down. And third of all, she says to him, really interestingly, don't do it for yourself. Alta v'ata tiyeh ka'achad ha'nevalim b'Yisrael. If you do this, you will be seen as one of the most disgusting men in Israel. Ata daber el hamelach ki lo yimne'eni mimaka. And why don't you go to the king? Because, right, he will not refuse for me to marry. This can be done kedasa v'chadin. A Barbanel has to suggest that what's happening here is this is just Tamar grasping at straws, but it really, the pshat is clearly that this is a very serious thing that she's saying, as we'll see, because she's going to say this again in a couple of psukim. Now, we have once again over here multiple references to Yosef. I mean, there are so many others. I'm not going to go through them all, but just like the clear ones. So the line of Shechvi Imi, that's exactly what the wife of Potiphar says to Yosef twice. Tomer Shechva Imi, right? And then she gets him again the day when no one was there, the day when no one was home. Shechva Imi, right? And then he runs away. What do we also have? What does Tamar say to Amnon? Don't do es hanivala hazos, right? Don't do this thing. We'll scroll down for one second. Tamar is going to describe this a little bit later as the ra'ah hagdola. This is a terrible thing, and that's exactly what Yosef describes. How Yosef describes this as well. When Yosef says, "I'm not going to do it," right? So he says, "Ich esa hara'ah hagdola hazos." How could I do such a terrible thing? You also have the same basic framework of Ashes Potiphar saying very short, Shechva imi, and Yosef refusing, and Yosef going on and on and on at length, right, protesting and saying, can't do this, can't do this, can't do this. So we have the legacy of Yosef being brought up again and again and again. We also have the legacy of Shechem and Dinah. We'll talk about the meaning of all of it, but I just wanted to get through the psukim and the basic story, and then we'll take a step back and talk about all of it. Okay. Now the Navi continues. Lo ava l'sham b'kola, right? He ignored her voice. Right. So that's the rape. The same language of both inui, right, of both affliction and bedding. We have with Dina as well. When Shechem vayikach osa v'eshkav osa vayaneha. Both of those words. And then we have what's absolutely fascinating. What happens immediately afterwards? All of a sudden, as much as Amnon had been obsessed with Tamar beforehand, he hates her even more. Right? Earlier he said to her, right, Bowie, come, shichli miachosi. Now he says, get up and get out. I mean, is there Amnon? What's there to say? Absolutely worst person in Tanakh. Now, you know, we got to figure out why, what happened to turn that around. But before we do, let's just look at the next couple of psukim just to get down the total disgustingness of Amnon. Tomalo al odos hara. Once again, she says no, right? Al odos hara gadol azos me'acharas hasharasi simadi l'shalachini. Right? Please don't send me away. What is Tamar hoping for now? At least, what's the halacha? The halacha is after someone has raped a besula, so he has to, we have to say this carefully, not that he has to marry her, he is obligated to offer her marriage if she is interested. Reason being, he now has seriously destroyed her marriage prospects, and at least he has to offer the option, if she wants, of marriage going forward, right? Which, you know, we live in a totally different socioeconomic world, but for many women, apparently that was something they were deeply interested in, as we see from Tamar over here. Amnon says no, Vayakras Naro Misharso. And this is really, I mean, what can you say? Vayomer Shilchuna as Zos me alai hafutza. Right? Send this away from me outside, Unaol Hadel as Achara, and lock the door behind her. Right, so that's exactly what happens. The Navi, I'll scroll down for a second. The Navi tells us that happens. Then Allah Dela Sachara, she's thrown out onto the street and the door is locked behind. What is there to say about Amnon? Now the question is though, why is Amnon? Where does the hatred come from? So Rashi quotes a Gemara. It's an awesome Gemara. I remember learning this actually in ninth grade. But I have to look at some of them in Farshim because there's something I really don't understand about it. And the Gemara explains, the reason why Amnon hated Tamar so much is because Tamar got her revenge. What did Tamar do? Basically, Tamar managed to cut off, Amnon's male sexual organ. Cuts off his penis. She gets his penis dead. So that would explain the hatred. problem with that, which I don't understand, is that how can Tamar ask for marriage afterwards? That's halachically prohibited. Gemara says that she rendered him a kura shivcha. She rendered him totally destroyed down there, so she should be prohibited from marrying him. So I got to look at some levarsh on that. I don't really understand. But that's probably not the pshat in what's happening. Pshat in what's happening probably comes from the Abarbanel says it, the Malbim says it. I actually saw some people quote, Rav Soloveitchik talks about this in Halach Tshuva. It's a very, very, very deep point. And it's very important for us for understanding what happened with David last with Bathsheba previously. How does one react to sin? That's the question. Let's look at Abarbanel. Abarbanel says, Gam nuchal lamar o, sha poel hamiguna zedarko, shebeshlamato yikneh adam yimenu charata raba visina gedola. Right? When the person is trying to cope with what he has done, and he has terrible regret, he is also going to have terrible hatred. Uchma'amar hamadini harisha'im milayim charatos. Right, it's the courtroom tears. The criminals, the Rishoyim, are filled with regrets. Amnon is, right, he's horrified by what he's done, but who does he hate? He hates, he externalized the hatred. He turns, right, he blames the victim for what has just happened. Lachin Amnon lo atzar koch lerosa od behis harato bimasha asa. He looks at Tamar and he is filled with, you know, disgust at himself, but that's not tshuva. So we talked about Davin and Bathsheba. Feeling regret is not tshuva. Tshuva is actually building yourself back up and taking responsibility. And how does Amnon channel the regret, which is not tshuva? Regret is a basic human emotion. Even the biggest pig in Tanakh, Amnon feels regret for what he did. But the response to that regret is, he throw her out of my sight. He blames her. He can't look at her because of what that says about himself. So rather than change himself, Amnon is throwing Tamar out of the house. Malbim says basically the same thing. As soon as the flame of lust was extinguished, writes the Malbim, so it was not true love. As Amnon, right, as the heat of the moment begins to die down, and Amnon begins to realize what he just did, he just raped his, adoptive sister, basically. Shav lisno, who does he hate? Es hanosei sha'al yado nisvav lozos. He hates the person who brought this to him. He hates Tamar. He blames her for what he did. The lust caused his hatred. When he thinks, right, how disgusting it was what he just did 2 minutes ago. Now, once he's given into the Yetzer Hara, what after the pleasure the Yetzer Hara gives him, right? Not only is in hindsight, you feel terrible about the pleasure that happens. That's a universal experience with sin. It's probably even more intense because, like, it's hard to have a more disgusting thing to do than Amnon has just done. But his reaction is ne'apach libo bekirvo lisin'ah gidola. And there we have an extremely stark contrast, right, with the act of David and Bathsheba. We saw last week in Tehillim that line that David had of chatasi l'negdi tamid. David also has his sin in front of him at all times. However, he did not react to his avera. Now, David's avera, as we explored, was not in the same league as what Amnon has just done. But nevertheless, his response to the sin, the tshuva response to sin, is to then take that charata, take all of the burning passions we saw in Tehillim, and channeling that into building himself back up, taking responsibility, and doing the right thing moving forward. As opposed to Amnon over here, who goes in the radically opposite direction. He takes all that regret, which is just a natural phenomenon, and then he uses it to double down, right? To further conceal, further push it away. He sees Tamar, he sees his sin, and so his reaction is that line of just unspeakable cruelty to his servant, saying, Shilchuna ezos me'alai hachutza. Right. This is extremely fundamental for the understanding of the Yetzer Hara generally. Okay, so now let's just get to the last part of this part of the story, and then we'll take a step back and talk about, I think some of the importance of some of the Yosef and Dina parallels, and then we'll throw in one more point before we close. So then we're told about Tamar. Ve'alah kesones pasim. Okay, so if we needed any other hint that like the Navi is going over the top of the fact that we should remember Yosef when we see the story, we're told she had a garment of many, many beautiful colors, which obviously the only other one of those we've ever seen is Yosef's. So these were the special, apparently, garments which David gave. Now, Yaakov made a mistake because Yaakov gave one to only one son, but David gave the Kesonas Pasim to all of his daughters. Right? And so what does she do? So she puts dirt on her head. She tears her Kesonas Pasim. So we need more Yosef. I mean, we have the torn coat of many colors. I mean, come on, right? It's right there. Batasam yada al rosha vatelech haloch bizaka. And she's walking through the streets, right? And she is just walking through the streets, crying and screaming. Then what do we have? V'yom leila Avshalom achia. So Avshalom, her brother, brings her in. Ha'aminon achich hayaymach was little Amnon, your brother, right? It's Amnon. The parsha explained, Ha'aminon is like a derogatory line. Was little Amnon with you? No, so he's using a euphemism here, obviously. La'ata achosi hacharishi, be quiet. Achihu, he's your brother. Al tashisi es libechol devarazeh, right? Don't take this thing to heart, which is a little bit difficult to understand what exactly Avshalom means. That teshev tamar v'shomima beis Avshalom achia. And then Avshalom takes Tamar into his own house where she remains destined, right? Which I think some of Rashi explain that Tamar never gets married after this. I think that when Chazal talk about what happens with Dina afterwards, and the view in the Midrashim that Dina moves into the house of Shimon, I think that they are picking up on this exact point over here. Because of course, what's going to happen in the next few psukim is going to be Avshalom's revenge, and he's going to go and murder Amnon. So that's Avshalom. So there we go. And then what does David do? David does nothing. David Shamas called the Verma Ela, Vayichaloma Od. David is very angry, but he doesn't actually do anything. So we need to talk about why David doesn't do anything. We need to talk about why the Navi is bringing the memory of Yosef and Dina. And then I want to close with this point from Shoftim Yitas. See, I think what that's doing over there. So David doesn't do anything, right? He hears everything. He's horrified. Not just he's angry, but he's exceptionally angry. That's totally understandable. I mean, who could imagine? But he doesn't do anything. And probably David doesn't do anything for a very simple, very important reason, which is he can't. What's David supposed to say to Amnon? Having just come out where he committed, was it adultery? Was it not? Has been talked about at length, but at minimum, having sinned in the realm of Gilei Arayos, and also very possibly one view in the Gemara where it was not done fully consensually. So David does not have a leg to stand on. Whether it's because David. Whether what David did is public knowledge, and that's one of the fascinating things. It's like no one knows. The Ramban talks about did Yaakov ever find out what happened to Yosef, and that's unknown. Was David's sin public knowledge or not is unknown. But either because people know it, so David, you're a hypocrite, or because David knows it himself, he can't stand up on this because he feels like he has no leg to stand on. David also knows that he is seeing before his very eyes the punishment that has been prophesied to him by the Nasan, right? Nasan told him, the evil is going to come out of your house. It's going to be Mida Keneged Mida. And we could figure it out, right? It's pretty obvious to us, the parallels here, the punishment that David himself is suffering over here. Well, David feels it as well. And David feels trapped. David feels like there's nothing that he can do. And what's so interesting is that that's the exact same experience David had while the sins with Bathsheba were unfolding, where after the initial problem, David then felt compelled. He felt like he didn't have a choice but to bring Uriah back. Then he didn't have a choice but to send Uriah to be killed. He felt he didn't have a choice but to bring Bathsheba, to marry Bathsheba afterwards to try to continue the cover-up, right? Continually, David does the wrong thing because he feels like he doesn't have a choice. Now, as we get into the post-game, into the punishment stage, the same exact thing is going to happen. David, the whole road, this is the whole road leading to the rebellion of Avshalom and the ultimate death of Avshalom. David is going to feel, he's going to know he's doing the wrong thing over here, but he doesn't feel like he has any choice. Once again, it is a perfect case of Mida Keneged Mida, the punishment unfolds. Now, we have the parallel, right? The parallels to Yosef and the parallels to Dina. So the first thing that we definitely need to say about this is that the Navi is going back to a theme which it's had many, many times before. We've had many times the Navi associating David HaMelech with Yaakov Avinu. And the reason for that was clear. It was, you know, we had the person, right? He's got family issues. He's on the run. We had his father-in-law is giving him the run. We had many, 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 many cases where Yaakov and David were being linked to each other. And we had the Bechir Sheba Avos, right? The ultimate of the forefathers of the nation. And we have in David, the founder of the monarchy. So it's totally understandable. That's happening once again over here, right? What do Yosef and Dina both have in common? They both have a father who suffers immensely from what happens to them. So what happens to Dina and what happens to Yosef when he sold him to slavery, from Yaakov's perspective, it's all wrapped up into one. So on the father's side, it's important that we have the raising of Yosef and the raising of Dina over here, because that's important for thinking about David. But it's also very important for thinking about Amnon and for thinking about Tamar, everything about Avshalom. But we'll talk about Avshalom next week when we get to the revenge stage. The Navi compares both Tamar and Amnon to Yosef. But Tamar was the one who was wearing the kesones pasim, right? She's the one wearing the multicolored thing. Tamar was the one who was using the Yosef lines that Yosef used to Ashes Potiphar. That's exactly what Tamar was saying to Amnon. At the same time, and in that context, the connection is obvious, right? Here we have the person who was victimized by their siblings, right? We look at Yosef, and partially we see the total victim of his own brothers, and that's exactly what is happening with Tamar. We also have many connections between Amnon, right? Many connections between Amnon and Yosef. And there, right, you know, he's the one who's saying how tiu kolish may I lie. He's the one who's has his brothers hating him. We're gonna have more next week when he's gonna be killed, and the Navi is gonna use a line that David mourned him for all of the days, just like Yaakov mourns Yosef. But in that case, it's clear that, rather than associating Yosef with Amnon, what are we supposed to realize? We're supposed to realize that here we have two totally radically opposite people, right? Sometimes the connection is used to connect, and sometimes it's used to highlight the difference. And what is the difference? I mean, Yosef, right? He was on the other end. Yosef is the ultimate example of Kovesh es Yetzro, the ultimate example of withholding, of overcoming his Yetzer Hara, when he had every reason in the book to say yes to Ashes Potiphar, from his own Yetzer Hara to the consequences he knows full well that are going to happen if he refuses. You know, even his own immaturity, his own which you know, Rashi highlights in the beginning of the story of Yosef, right? Yosef's able to overcome his own inner nature. He's able to overcome his Yetzer Hara. He's able to overcome everything when faced with the moment of truth. Amnon has every reason not to do this, right? Yosef had every reason to do it. Amnon has every reason not to do it. He has a brother who is the last person you want as an enemy. He has the whole kingship to look forward to. This is his sister. It's disgusting. He has every reason not to do it. And nevertheless, when it comes to Amnon, we have just the total giving in to the Yetzer Hara over everything else, right? We have Yosef, you have overcoming the Yetzer Hara at all costs, and we have with Amnon the polar opposite, just like, you know, like a walking Yetzer Hara. And we think about the trajectory that the two of them go on after that, and what this says about the Malchus. I mean, you know, Yosef shows that he indeed, the dreams he had about kingship, well, he shows that he's eligible to be the ruler based on his behavior with Ashes Potiphar. Amnon, who comes into this also as the crown prince, as the designated person who's set up for royalty, well, the way he reacts to the Yetzer Hara shows that this is not at all in the cards, and it's just downhill for Amnon from there, right? And I think it's also important for us to think about this piece. We talked about David and Bathsheba, so we talked about the Yetzer Haras of the Malchus, right? The opportunities which are really only ever given to the king. And we have a bit of a corrective over here with Amnon, where sometimes it's not just, you know, the Yetzer Hara that uniquely attacks the king, but in Amnon we have the universal Yetzer Hara, which if anything, being future king should have helped Amnon more than anyone else, who has a greater incentive to not do what he does than Amnon, thanks to the Malchus. And yet even that is not enough to prevent him, right? So if David shows us the danger of the Malchus, Amnon just shows us the danger of the Yetzer Hara, that even the incentive of kingship is not enough to stop him from doing what he's supposed to do. But let's talk about Dina, and then let's just have one point from Shoftim to close. The Rav Amnon Bazak in the VBN. So he quotes, these pieces are all obvious. He actually mentions that from the time of the Gaonim already, they were talking about Yosef, actually, not about Dina. Or was it Dina? I don't remember. Whatever. Either way, the Dina references are obvious. The point he makes is that it makes Amnon once again look even worse. Because what happens with Dina, the surprise with Dina, is that after she's raped by Shechem, all of a sudden Shechem wants to marry her. And so, you know, at least it's like, you know, at least Shechem wanted to marry her afterwards. When it comes to Amnon, it's not even that, right? He's throwing her out. He's throwing her out on the streets afterwards. I actually think there's a totally different point here for us to realize, which is, why was it that Shechem still desired Dina afterwards, and why was it that Amnon didn't? As the Abarbanel, as Soloveitchik, as the Malbim pointed out, it was because it's the truth is, as Tamar herself said, this was a nivala b'Yisrael, right? This is something that the Jewish world looked at as totally and completely disgusting and unacceptable. For Shechem, it's par for the course. Shechem does not feel any guilt after he assaults Dina because he's the crown prince. And in the in the outside world, it's normal. Yeah, you're the king. You're the son of the king. You take what you like. Nobody, the Midrashim that Esther was married to Mordechai, nobody bats an eyelash at, oh my gosh, how could Ahasuerus take a married woman? Right? That's not something that anybody ever thinks would have ever stopped Ahasuerus for even 1 second, right? But it's a core assumption over here that in all of Klal Yisrael, that it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter if you're a person on the street, doesn't matter if you're the son of the king, that this is something which is not done, right? Lo yaseh Israel. This is a nevala which is not done in Israel. And it is that universal recognition that applies even to kings, right? Which then has even Amnon filled with this self-loathing, which he then turns onto Tamar. And we think about David and Bathsheba once again. Why did David feel the compelling need to cover it up? Well, this parak gives us the answer. Because even though Bnei Israel have had that mistake in the beginning of the book, they want a king like all other kings, Klal Yisrael is still not a nation like all other nations. And if the people found out what David had done, they would have been horrified. He's a king that doesn't give him an excuse to do what he's doing. It gives Ahasuerus an excuse to do what he wants to do. It gives Shechem an excuse to do what he wants to do. But the Kedusha of Am Yisrael still stays intact. And Amnon is, you know, running in the total polar reversal of that. It's the most anti-Jewish thing that one can possibly do, and that's exactly what Tamar is telling Amnon, right? And in the moment, he doesn't care. I think, by the way, that when Rashi was talking about Tamar having been exceptionally modest, I think that also may have been motivating Rashi. I think Rashi may have been contrasting Tamar with Vateitze Dina, you know, at the beginning of Parak Lamed Aleph. Trying to get that out there. Okay, so we have then the Yosef piece. What this is telling us about David's role over here, what this is telling us about Tamar as the victim, and what we're seeing about Amnon as just the walking embodiment of the, if the Yetzer Hara was a walking person. And we also see what this is telling us about the broader Klal Yisrael, right? We may have a totally perverse and sick and disgusting son of the king, but at least the people that he's the king of, you know, are still have their Kedusha intact. And that's really important, because let's just look at the one last piece, the one last parallel, which we have that comes out of this parak. And it's not from Sefer Bereishis, but it takes us back to Sefer Shoftim. We go back to the last time we've seen a rape in Tanakh, which was Pilegesh Begiva at the end of Sefer Shoftim. The Navi there used lines which were word for word once again exhibited here in the story of Amnon and Tamar. We can identify two. One of them, the protest of the owner of the house. Remember the guy, the nice guy, right? The guy who took in the Levi and his wife. Al Achai, what does it sound like? Al Achai, Al Tariuna, LBC, Al Tasu, Asinavalazos, right? The using the three times saying Al, and talking about rape as a Nevala. It's exactly the same thing that that Tamar does over here. And what is the response of the people from the city of Giva? Lo avu ha'anashim l'shmo alo. Just like with Amnon, who twice we had with Amnon, lo ava l'shmo ala, lo ava l'shmo mekola. Is it a coincidence that the Navi also brings back some of the lines of Pilegesh Begiva? And I don't think so. Because when we first started learning Sefer Shmuel, right, beginning of last year, when we talked about the introduction to Shmuel, right, the total collapse of Bnei Yisrael into the world, the pre-Bereishis world, right, where Bnei Yisrael had turned into Sodom. And what was the message that the Navi was hammering over there? All of this was able to happen because Vahi Vayimemahem Ein Melech B'Yisrael, you look at the world of anarchy, you look at the world of no leadership, you see the rape, you see what comes afterwards, the civil war. And that, I think, is exactly what we are going to see over here. Where's the king? Where is the king? Where's the king right now? David is the king, but David can't take action. Because of what he's done with Bathsheba, he feels powerless to move. He feels powerless to enforce justice. The people haven't collapsed, right? The people are not on the Madrega. They were on the end of Shoftim. Everything that David and Shmuel have done to build the people back up, that's intact. But there's no king. And when there's no king, we see what certain people can do to take advantage. And what does this put us on the road to? What happens here is going to put us on the road to civil war, just like Pilegesh Begiva, because Avshalom is going to murder Amnon, and then Avshalom is going to come back, and then he's going to start his machinations. And then before we know, we're going to have the civil war between David and Avshalom. So I think the last piece to take out of this part of the parak is the beginning of Shmuel, right? Going back to Chana, and then Shmuel was all about the rebuild from the world of Pilegesh Begiva, the world where there was no king, the world where there was no recognition of Ribono Shalom in the world. And that we built back. There were some slips and some trips, but we never got back to that low. But we have this moment over here, and the Navi is reminding us of it, even as we're driving home, that we have not fallen to that level. The people are still on a level of Kedusha, but there is no king. That's the last piece to take away, is that David, because of what he's done, is out of the picture, and we see the consequences happening very, very quickly. Okay, that's all I got. If anyone has any thoughts, love to hear. And then looking forward to next week. I'm gonna brush my teeth or something after this. I mean, yeah. Okay, yeah, Shukach, everybody. Have a good
Thank you.